Welcome to Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm Crystal Leedy, your host just for today, and I have a guest who's going to help us understand what's happening in Madison, Wisconsin, and is democracy coming to the USA? With me by phone from Madison is Ruth Conniff. Welcome, Ruth.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, we're so glad that you could make it here. You're the political editor of The Progressive, a magazine that is also based in Madison.
That's right.
You're right.
The Progressive magazine was founded by Fighting Bob La Follette, and it's been published out of Madison, Wisconsin for the last 101 years.
Wow, what a wonderful heritage you've got there. Well, Ruth, I know it's a big question, but what is going on in Wisconsin now?
There is a lot going on in Wisconsin. We are experiencing really a spontaneous uprising of people around the state who are converging on the Capitol, which is right here in downtown Madison. And it's been going on for a week now. Every day, the Capitol building itself is jammed with protesters. They're spilling out across the steps. There were 100,000 people here, which is half the population of the city. 100,000 protesters jammed into the Capitol and around the outside of the square on Saturday. And day after day, you know, people are there. They're marching. They're chanting. Our teachers went on strike. My kids, who go to a Madison public school, just went back to school for the first time yesterday after being off half of last week and Monday of this week. And the issue is that our Republican governor is trying to take away the fundamental rights of union members to collectively bargain, the public sector unions in Wisconsin, which includes an enormous cross-section of our state. Our firefighters are exempted from the bill, but they've been out in force because they realize what's at stake.
So they're supporting
all of our teachers, all of our public employees, the people who plow the roads, the people who work in our hospitals, all of them are facing not only budget cuts in this budget repair bill that the governor is trying to push through, but also as part of that bill, he has declared that they should no longer be able to bargain collectively for issues such as all of their benefits, their retirement, et cetera. So it's really fundamentally a battle about whether unions should exist at all.
Well, that's pretty amazing in this day and age. I guess it means the battle is continuing on. Ruth, it's going to be okay with you. In a few minutes, I'm going to invite our listeners to the question.
Okay.
So we'll do that in a little while. For those who don't know that number, I'll just put it out now. The call-in number is 503-231-8187, and our engineering genius will let us know when we do have a call. But back to what's happening there in your state. This is kind of, well, I'll just go ahead and ask. I've heard this related to the popular uprisings in the Middle East, and the question is this American jihad? To put a certain take on the universality of the situation here in the U.S., our people seem to be waking up to something new that's being born for this generation of Americans. What do you think about that?
I think that there is no doubt that the news from the Middle East helped to inspire the protest here in Madison. I think that when people saw just the power of collective action in Egypt, in Tunisia, and sweeping across the Middle East, that it really, I think what it did is it reminded people in Wisconsin that we really do have the power as citizens to make our voices heard, that we don't just have to be rolled over by this right-wing government. And, you know, the chutzpah and the outrageousness of what the governor is doing, I think, has activated particularly people who support the labor movement and union members, who are part, of course, of a long tradition of, you know, movement politics. But something, I think the feeling of immediate action and energy and the sense that you really can make a difference has atrophied. And that, you know, as the membership in labor unions has declined, there is a kind of complacency that has set in the public, where people have forgotten that because of the labor movement, we have an 8-hour day. We have a weekend. We have the ability to bargain over wages and benefits. And that these things make an enormous difference. And in fact, they are the foundation of the entire American middle class. And that is really what's at stake here. Because in Wisconsin, this isn't just about our state. This is the reason that Scott Walker, our governor, is doing what he's doing, is because he has prepared for this. He has been, he has major contributors who have prepared for this as a national assault on workers' rights. This is a coordinated national campaign that we're seeing expressed in our state, and it touches us so personally. You know, last night the governor had what he called a fireside chat, which is an incredibly ironic name for the speech that he gave to Wisconsin citizens, because, of course, Franklin Delano Roosevelt gave the famous fireside chats that calmed people during a time of economic crisis and war. Well, what the governor did was he went on the radio to say, here's my agenda and here's the situation. We have public sector unions who are able to get decent health care benefits and retirement benefits. Their wages are lower than their counterparts in the private sector, but they get some decent benefits. They can save for their retirement. They can send their kids to college. They can get health care when they need it. He compared these people to people in the private sector. He used the example of his brother who runs a catering business and pays $800 a month for his health care. And, you know, these are anecdotes that we've heard, particularly in the health care debate, over and over again from politicians. Usually what they say is, here is a person who has cancer and can't get health care coverage. Here is a person who is going broke trying to afford health care. But what the governor said had this important difference. He didn't say, here's my plan to help people like that. He said, because these people, like an auto worker in Janesville who's been out of work for 2 years, can't afford health insurance, or my brother who pays this incredible bill for health insurance every month, because of the situation that they're in, nobody should have these benefits. His anecdotes about people who are suffering were used to make the point that, therefore, all of you citizens of Wisconsin should be without health care, like my brother, should be without the ability to save for your retirement, should not be able to send your children to college. This is a stunning political statement.
It certainly is.
And it makes you personally, you really have to sit up and take notice. This isn't about broad ideological discussions. This is about a direct assault on the vast majority of Americans.
And Ruth, we have two callers already. Our first caller is John. Let's bring you into the conversation, John. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having a good progressive talk and democracy now. I love it. Anyway, Ruth, thanks for your wonderful service and I love your passion. And my question is, I don't know that much about Wisconsin politics. Do you think that you folks are getting an accurate vote count in elections in Wisconsin? I just wonder, because of all the corruption by the Republicans for probably the last 20 years, if people are checking and balancing your election process, because I find it very strange that these people get into office in the first place. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for the question. So just to give you a little background on Wisconsin politics, I think what happened here is a product not so much of voter fraud as it is fraud by the politicians, who did not run on the idea of taking away labor's right to organize. I mean, when Scott Walker ran, again, he was the Milwaukee County executive and a former state legislator here. He ran against the mayor of Milwaukee, Tom Barrett, and it was a very sleepy campaign. The sense from the public, I think, was that Scott Walker is kind of a nice guy. He's got conservative politics. He's very, very anti-abortion. Most people didn't know that. Planned Parenthood in the state struggled very hard to try to get the word out about that because his demeanor is sort of boyish and charming. And there was not the kind of voter turnout that there was in 2008, which was true across the country. I mean, that was a historic election. So we didn't get a tremendous voter turnout. In Milwaukee, which has sort of the main concentration of African-American voters in the state, because this is a very white state, there were a lot of signs, there were billboards that were bought by national right-wing groups talking about the penalties for voter fraud and promoting the idea that you needed ID to vote, which was not true. So there was definitely some voter intimidation that went on. But overall, I think what happened to Wisconsin, and Wisconsin had been, we had had a Democratic governor, Jim Doyle. We had had Democratic control of both houses of our state legislature. We had Senator Russ Feingold, who also lost in the last election, who's a very prominent progressive Democrat in the U.S. Senate. And I think what happened in Wisconsin is that there was a tremendous influx of cash from outside the state by right-wing groups. And the story that I think is really important to take away about Wisconsin is that the Koch brothers, the $43 billion Koch brothers, who are involved in right-wing campaigns around the country and who own significant oil and lumber interests, funneled so much money into our state, along with other right-wing groups and along with the National Republican Party, that they were essentially able to buy this election and to buy Scott Walker. And there is no question that they succeeded in purchasing something here that's going to benefit them economically and politically in the future. So I think that's really what happened to Wisconsin, is that we were a target of a coordinated national right-wing strategy. They took over our state, and now we see the result of that. Just in a few weeks in office, our governor has created so much division and anger in our state. I mean, there has never been a political figure in state government as controversial as Scott Walker is, and he just got into office.
Ruth, and, people are really listening and interested, and we have two callers, actually. We'll take them, if that's okay, and then you could respond to them. Thanks. Caller, Bill, what have you got to say here?
You know, I was just in a business communications class, and my professor, we were actually having a discussion about really understanding the importance of this issue. And while it wasn't necessarily related to business, it was related to the fact that teachers make a substantial investment in obtaining their credentials. And it was fascinating to me that to take away this bargaining right, we basically came down to a conclusion that it was also not only an attack on the teachers, but an attack on our culture, in that if we talk about economic advancement in our society, teachers are the backbone of it. And if we attack that, then we're attacking the rights of minorities to obtain quality educations as well. So, not just minorities, women and the poor. So it's fascinating to me that this discussion is much deeper than just the unions. It's really a societal issue.
Yes, I would agree with you.
So that's what I want you to know, that even in Oregon, this is a conversation in my class.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And we have another caller. Carlene, hi, what would you like to add to the conversation?
Good morning, and thank you, Ruth, for being here, and thanks, Crystal, for getting this organized. What I wanted to ask you, Ruth, is whether or not you have any insight or comments you could make about what's happening in Ohio, Indiana, and Tennessee, because I know they're similar, but they're also, each one's very different in some ways. And I would just like to know if you could speak to any of those.
Well, I was in the Capitol building in Madison yesterday, when the announcement came down that the Democratic members of the Indiana legislature had fled the state, just as our Democratic senators here in Wisconsin have fled in order to prevent the passage of this budget repair bill that takes away union rights. So there was a huge cheer from the crowd in Madison when they heard that, inspired by Wisconsin, the Democratic legislators in Indiana had also fled. And in that state, that's going to have a direct, significant impact, because that bill had an expiration date on it, an expiration time, and that time has passed. And so they actually succeeded in killing the bill in Indiana. So that was a major victory, and it was very exciting to people here in Wisconsin and people around the nation. In Ohio, it's a different situation because it's such a Republican-dominated legislature. There are only about 10 Democrats, and unfortunately, legislatively, they're not going to be able to have much leverage to make a change to the anti-union legislation there. But I think what is happening, regardless of the immediate legislative impact of these protests and the defections of Democratic state legislators, which are slowing down the process and preventing Republicans from ramming through this legislation, I think what's going to happen is just that it raises consciousness across the country, and it really activates people to realize that they can do something.
I teach a course on classism, and it's just a perfect opportunity to have some deeper level discussions about what's really going on. So, I mean, it's just like handed me a textbook.
I mean, my other question, really incredible.
Yeah, and my other question was, is there any chance for a recall of the governor in Wisconsin?
Yep, there is a recall movement, and it takes a year. The governor has to be in office for 1 year before he's eligible to be recalled. And I think there's going to be a very significant campaign to recall Scott Walker. And my hope, and the hope of a lot of people here, is that he truly has overplayed his hand. I mean, he has become a national Republican star. There's no doubt. His star has risen on the right. And, you know, it's just meteoric, and he's the figurehead of this right-wing movement. But it's so extreme, and it impacts people so personally across the state that I mean he's clearly going to be, he's going to go down in history as potentially the most unpopular governor that our state has ever seen, and I think that there's a very significant chance for recalling him in a year.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks so much for taking time to talk to us today.
Sure, I'm glad to do it.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much, Ruth, and I believe we have one more caller. Carla.
Hello.
Go ahead with your question or comment, please.
I'm loving the show. I'm a local Ask Me, local 88 union member. I'm actually from Madison. I've been paying attention every single day. I love the conversation so far. I wonder if your guests could speak to some of the things that are in the budget bill in Wisconsin. I totally appreciate all of the rallies and the action happening around labor organizing and collective bargaining. Of course, that's very, very important. But there's something hidden in the budget bill, or quite a few things, that I wonder if your caller can speak to. Specifically in Wisconsin, the utilities are publicly owned. Yes. And one of the concerns with the outside influence and what money can buy in politics, some people are looking at the future of Wisconsin utilities, and
that's
will they continue to be publicly owned, or will they be bought by outside influences thanks to this governor? So I'm wondering
that's
if you guys could talk about that a little bit.
Yes. In the budget bill, which is 144 pages long, there is a provision which is now gaining some attention, and it's a very important provision. And what it says is that the state can sell its energy plants, quote, with or without the solicitation of bids for any amount that it determines to be in the best interest of the state. In other words, they can sell off our public utilities for any amount of money without getting any kind of competitive bids. And this is where people are really connecting the dots to the Koch brothers, those billionaire brothers who have financed the right wing around the country and have poured. They were the largest contributors to Scott Walker's campaign for governor. They own some significant interests in gas, lumber, and they have a toilet paper facility here in the state. And this would allow Walker to simply give them the state's utilities, or to his other political supporters and cronies, to just give away the public utilities in Wisconsin. And this is significant, first of all, because it's so clearly payback to political contributors, but secondly, because it comes as part of the so-called budget repair bill, which Walker has repeatedly said is necessary to address the economic crisis in our state. Well, giving away our public utilities, specifically saying not to the highest bidder, but to whoever he wants, and deeming that in the public interest, it completely belies this idea that this is about solving our budget crisis.
That's so important, and thank you for clarifying that for our listeners. I encourage people to dig deep into that budget bill, because there's quite a few other things that have not been brought into the mainstream media yet, and I think the fight in Wisconsin is definitely going to impact other states. I encourage people to pay attention to what's going on. Thank you so much for the conversation.
Yeah, thank you. And just to say a couple more things about what's going on with the state budget in Wisconsin, which I realize, you know, not everybody is following very carefully. But a couple of other things that are in there is the bill would give the Walker administration sweeping powers to revamp Medicaid in our state. And because he has set up, he's replaced our Commerce Department with something called the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, which is a board headed by himself and his handpicked cronies, members of private industry. He has given himself rulemaking authority and regulatory functions that used to belong to state agencies in this state. So he is this is really a massive power grab and a transfer of power. It's fundamentally anti-democratic. It's a transfer of power to this one executive and this board of private industry folks and away from the people and their representatives.
Absolutely, and it's kind of terrifying. So I really hope there's some positive outcomes going on in Wisconsin. I'll take my call off the air and make room for other people, but keep up the good work, and a big shout-out on Wisconsin, everyone who's out of Capitol Square.
Ruth, you're very popular with us here in Portland. There's a lot of good labor people here, and we've got one more caller waiting, and that's Brian. Brian, hi. Let's hear from you.
Okay, good morning. Thanks, Ruth, for already I've learned quite a bit about your what's going on in Wisconsin. However, I just would like to bring up a point that in 1968 in Memphis, the garbage workers went on strike, and it got eventually got national support, community support. These are the poorest workers. A couple of young fellows got killed, and that's where Martin Luther King went down to, where he merged the labor movement and the civil rights movement. And at the Bread and Roses Center this Saturday, there's a film going to be shown called At the River I Stand, and it's that story about those brave workers there and how the organization and their courage just brought the whole spotlight to a labor movement, and it shows that, you know, this kind of history gets lost.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because one of the people who was there at that garbage workers strike and marched with Dr. King, Jesse Jackson, and he was here in Madison yesterday.
Oh, cool.
And speaking to the workers, he was in the center of the Capitol Rotunda, and he really led the chanting for a while. People were very excited by his presence here, and he really did connect the dots and talk about how the governor is not going after the union's pocketbooks. He's going after their heads, and this is fundamentally about democracy, and it's about whether or not people have the right to a decent life.
Right. That's where the I am a man sign was used by the workers. So this is going to be you can't be here, but this Saturday, February 26th, at the New Bread and Roses Center at 69th and Gleason at 7 o'clock, we're going to show that film. And it's a really inspiring and should help with all our consciousness and what we are able to do. So thanks a lot.
Yes, thanks so much for calling and sharing that with us. And it looks like we've got another person who'd like to comment, Ruth, and another person named Brian, is that right?
Yeah, sorry, it seemed like an echo of the past, but there you go. My daughter lives in Madison, and she's been on the front lines most days. I'm proud of her for being a good lefty activist, but she sends us daily updates kind of from the front lines, and she says that she's shocked when she sees, she doesn't have a television, but she sees it at work and stuff, and she's shocked at what is coming over the television. They don't give you anything like the true figures or depth of the demonstration and frustration and the spreading of it. The way that you would get, like, on cable, it's just another example of how you have to go to either foreign media or the alternative media here to get any real news. So the mainstream media are playing it down too. I mean, and my opinion, and you've probably heard this already, and even Robert Reich came out and used the very word. This is what we're facing here, is full-blown fascism. I mean, this is the sort of tactics Mussolini and old Adolf used to take the Weimar, in Hitler's case, the Wehrmacht, over, and the Weimar Republic, and then the German people, against most of their wishes at the time. But he was playing the same head games: nationalism, anti-union, anti-everything. And he got them as slaves eventually. This is what we are facing. The Koch brothers and their ilk want us as slaves. So this is a microcosm of what's happening all over the country, and it can go one of two ways. And if they lose in Wisconsin, which I don't think they will, but this guy needs to be recalled, and I hope he is, then this is going to be a signal to the country. And I can't believe that the people that aren't totally dumbed down by television aren't going to get it eventually, and it might have a blowback on the Republicans themselves. And maybe that's something you want to discuss, and I'll take the rest off the air. Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
I absolutely agree with that. I think those are a lot of good points. And I think, the first point about the media coverage, I experienced personally, because when the teacher strike started and when things really began to blow up with the huge demonstrations downtown, I was actually out in Washington, D.C., and I was watching on CNN. And at the same time, my daughters, my fourth grader and my first grader, were making it to the rallies with their grandparents, and they were so excited and activated. They were marching with their teachers. They were learning all about government and democracy and the labor movement. And then I would watch CNN, and I would see things like, for example, Mary Maitland, James Carville's wife and longtime Republican pundit, came on CNN and said, well, you know, public education, public schools are really systematized child abuse. They're so bad. The teachers are so overpaid. They do such a terrible job. You know, we just should throw out the whole thing. Well, you know, I'm listening to my children and their teacher, my children who go to a largely low-income public school in Madison with fabulous teachers and are having this incredible moving experience. And this kind of cynical, distant attitude is completely outrageous if you have any kind of personal stake in what's going on. Another example, the Tea Party protesters came to town on Saturday in Madison, and I was downtown. That's when I got back and got to come downtown with the kids, march around the square, see that incredible 100,000-person rally. The Tea Partiers were a tiny, tiny presence there. They had one corner of the square staked out. There were rumors that Sarah Palin was going to fly in. She did not show up, I think, because it would have been terrible video if she had come, because they were so vastly outnumbered. And as the Tea Partiers tried to speak, people surrounded them, chanting pro-union slogans and ringing cowbells. They were almost impossible to discern. Well, the mainstream media played that as the Tea Party Day, and they basically gave equal time, as if there were two sides with equal numbers of protesters. That was so distorted, just completely distorted perspective on what was going on. So I think you're right. I think that we're not getting, I think there's a laziness in the corporate media. There's a real fear of power, and there's a desire to pretend that there are always two equal sides, when in fact, they're not two equal sides in this issue. So, I think I agree with you, and I see that distortion also. And as far as fascism goes, I mean, Wisconsin, you know, we are, like Minnesota, famous for being a very nice, friendly Midwestern state. You don't see a lot of really nasty, aggressive ideological conflict in Wisconsin politics most of the time. For most of my life, the governor of this state was Tommy Thompson, who, you know, reached national prominence when President Bush appointed him to his administration as the head of Health and Human Services. He did some bad things. He was a Republican who loved welfare reform. But one thing about Tommy Thompson was he loved the state of Wisconsin. He was a good old boy. He liked the people. He lived here all his life. And he was very proud of our health insurance program for low-income children, Badger Care, and he used to brag about that everywhere.
Ruth, well, we should probably take a station break right now, so hang on for a moment while I let people know that the time is 8:33, and you're listening to KBOO FM in Portland, Oregon. And coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, we'll hear a special episode of the series Building a Powerful Left in the United States, featuring TruthDig journalists Robert Scheer, Larry Gross, Scott Tucker, David Sirota, and Chris Hedges. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints presents analysis of what's happening in Libya. And at 11, on the Recovery Zone, host Stephanie Potter speaks with Emily Clavins of Center for Earth Leadership, which offers a free 6-week Agent of Change course for anyone who would like to introduce sustainable practices and raise ecological awareness. And we will also hear from two graduates of the class. Then at 11:30, Ed Goldberg interviews Karen Abbott about her new book. She's the author of American Rose, The Life and Times of Gypsy Rose Lee. And remember to tune in later today for the annual Homelessness Marathon, 14 hours of a discussion of the homelessness live from the streets of Kansas City. That begins at 4 p.m. today. Okay, well, that's about all we have to say for now. Ruth, let's get back to what we're talking about today. Do you want to say a few more words? We do have two callers waiting. Should I take one of them for you now?
Sure.
Okay. Was that Nancy waiting?
Yes.
Yes, welcome.
Yes, I'm waiting.
Go ahead.
Thank you for the program. I just returned from a brief vacation staying with friends in Florida, and I thought I'd contribute a couple more dots for my fellow listeners to chew on about the universality of what's going on. The Governor Kelly, just newly elected in Florida, was head of a healthcare company that was behind the biggest Medicare fraud in history, and yet he still got elected by the good citizens. He has totally upended the state while reading the papers while I was down there over canceling a light rail project between St. Petersburg and Tampa and Orlando that's been in the works for 10 years and has managed to anger even some of the Republicans down there. Pardon me, he's also attacking the teachers' unions. And the accusation there has been that he is acting very unilaterally and he doesn't have the authority. There's also Governor Christie in New Jersey, who's also canceled a big rail project and has attacked the teachers' unions and is cutting things in his state. But it wasn't until I listened to this show this morning, and thank you, Ruth, that it dawned on me that what I'm seeing is kind of this CEO paradigm of being a governor of, in each of these cases, you have people being elected for the first time who are trying to run states as they would run corporations, where they don't have to consult, they don't have to negotiate. It's my way or the highway. And I just wanted to sort of throw that in, that I think that's another feature of what's going on, that you're quite correct. It's broader than simply attacking unions. It's more about, well, the way we need to get things done and cut through all the gridlock in the country is to elect these people who are simply going to take charge and be strong leaders. And I'll take any comments off the air. Thank you.
Well, I absolutely agree with that point, and I think what's the turning point that we're looking at here in Wisconsin is how bald-faced, really the outright theft of government and the public sector and our public utilities is by these corporate interests. You know, it's not just the usual talking points, which we have been hearing for many, many years. Remember, we heard George W. Bush was a CEO type, and the adults were in charge during the Bush administration, and they were going to run things more efficiently, and that included cutting budgets and facing political and economic realities. And, you know, it's a lot of claptrap, of course, because the Republicans had run up greater budget deficits than Democrats did. But more than that, I think this love affair with business and the idea that business is efficient, it's sensible, it's sort of morally right in some way in America, and somehow unions and the public sector and government itself are corrupt and, you know, bad for our country. I think this whole ideological structure that the right has built over many, many years, certainly since the Reagan administration, is crumbling because it is so bold-faced that what we are looking at is out-and-out theft. I think people see that when they look at the banking crisis and they see Goldman Sachs destroying the world economy fundamentally and then being bailed out with billions of dollars. I mean, this does not fit with that sort of neat worldview of capitalism as being clean and efficient and not corrupt. And in Wisconsin, what's happening now is that they are taking it to people like our school teachers. And the chutzpah is outrageous. So I want to get back to the Koch brothers for just a second. So the Koch brothers, who, you know, this billionaire pair of brothers, Charles and David Koch, who own Koch Industries, which is the largest privately owned company in the United States, they were the top contributor to Governor Scott Walker. And there's a great piece in the New York Times yesterday about a retreat that they organized through one of their political outfits called Americans for Prosperity. And what they did is they sent out this fundraising letter to other billionaires saying, we've got to all get together for this retreat at Rancho Mirage because we've got to stop public sector employee unions. So fundamentally what they're saying is, we billionaires have got to stop these public employees from making $50,000 a year and being able to save for their kids' college education. We've got to eviscerate that. I mean, the level of greed that is, you know, it's just overwhelming. I mean, do most Americans agree that people shouldn't be able to make a decent, not extravagant middle-class salary and save for their retirement? Do most Americans agree that people ought to be able to work hard every day and get health insurance? Or do they think that people should scrape by with barely enough to live on, no benefits, no prospect of retirement, and that billionaires like the Koch brothers and the other cronies of our Governor Scott Walker should collect all that money for themselves? Do they believe that we should have no-bid contracts and sell off all of our public utilities so that profits, more profits, can go to these corporations? Or do they think that we could together build a decent society? I mean, that's really what's at stake here, and I think that it has become so transparent in the case of Wisconsin that people who have considered themselves not so political, who maybe say, well, you know, unions, that was fine back in the industrial era, but maybe their time has passed, to sort of take a pass on being politically activated, they are forced to become involved because the assault on just fundamental American middle-class values is so clear.
And Ruth, our listeners, I think, are definitely with you on this. We've got two other callers waiting. Thomas, you're up next. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Important discussion, and I'd like to suggest just, you know, thoughts about stepping out a little bit out of the box to a little bit higher level of resolution in the interest of sort of intellectual honesty. I mean, it's obvious that this new batch of Republicans that have taken office, I have a particularly odious line and a very, very dangerous policies that they're aggressively pursuing, but, you know, and indeed Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin, I would imagine that he will swept into power and won his victory in the same way that that most of the new Democratic Congress people and other political figures have swept into in this recent election, and that is that the Democratic Party under Obama has failed to do almost anything for working class people, period. And so the disenchanted and disillusioned voters just didn't bother to show up to vote for his opposition. I mean, now look it. I mean, we can talk all we want about the Koch brothers and the evil Republicans. And of course, you know, incidentally, the Koch brothers have also been noteworthy contributors to the Democratic leadership council, and that's a fact. But you know, you're talking about a presidency right now that essentially has refused to do anything with the Employee Free Choice Act, in spite of the fact that the unity of labor unions and supporting that and people within unions. You know, you're talking about a president that just passed the Korean Free Trade Act, which is essentially the Korean correlate of NAFTA, which was also passed under a Democratic president, which was perhaps the single biggest blow to organized labor and manufacturing in the country. And not only that, but now in Washington, you essentially, at the cabinet level and the level of, top levels of government, Obama administration, you essentially have a redux of the untouchables. You have Wall Street bankers, the very same people that under the Clinton administration quarterbacked the Gramm-Leach-Bliley bill, which repealed Glass-Steagall, and also the Commodities Future Modernization Act, which made it absolutely possible for this type of absolute crazy casino capitalism, Wall Street speculation that ran the economy into the ground and made it possible for this regressive discussion about zeroing out all of state services in this privatization frenzy. And then, and not only that, you have the administration essentially channeling Reaganomics and talking about things like trickle-down economics, tax cuts for the rich, spurning business, supply-side economics. I mean, it is almost beyond the pale of Orwellian. And then we have what we consider to be the progressive element of the Democratic Party, and the best that they can do is essentially give the administration a free pass, which is just unbelievable.
Colin, we're going to ask you to wrap it up. We've got another call waiting, but we do thank you for your comments today.
Right. Well, we need to take responsibility for our own party and the fact that there's been massive co-optation at the core of the Democratic Party, and none of this would be possible. None of this, if it were not for the direct complicity and essentially the coin-operated nature of the electoral system, which is created a corrupted and complicit Democratic Party. And until we confess up to that, and we can get the guts to get out in the street and do some civil disobedience and really, until our representatives lead, follow, or get the heck out of the way, but business as usual and having the Wall Street insiders directly.
Okay, thanks so much.
I agree with you. I agree with the caller. And I think if you take a look at the Progressive magazine, you can find us on the web at progressive.org, or you can take a look at our monthly magazine, you will find that we have never carried water for the Democratic Party. And I agree 100% that when President Obama talks about sticking it to federal employees, when he has Tim Geithner, leading the bailouts of the banks, there is no doubt that the Democrats have been bought just as much as the Republicans have. Not by the Koch brothers, though. The Koch brothers make 98% of their political contributions to Republicans. So that there I would disagree. But that really is kind of a technicality. So at the national level, there is no question that the Democratic Party is a corporate party and that people are disgusted and that they didn't turn out in huge numbers in 2010, in part because they saw that electing Obama didn't stop the bailout of Wall Street. I think that's completely true, and there was really interesting polling on that. On the other hand, at the state level, I think where politics are a little more responsive directly to citizen participation, you see here in Madison that the Democratic senators who fled the Capitol and slowed down the process of this budget repair bill, not because they're immensely progressive politicians, they were pressured into that by this huge citizen uprising here. And so that has created a very interesting situation where the citizens have forced the Democratic representatives to get a little more backbone. And I think that that is what's so inspiring about what's happening in Madison. So, I mean, I don't think that it makes sense to say You know, the Republicans are terrible, and therefore the Democrats are an extremely progressive force. But I think that it's not dishonest to say that this, what's happening in Wisconsin, was engineered by a national right-wing campaign, and that to the extent that there's any pushback on that, a lot of it is financed by labor, which finances the Democratic Party, you know, and then that's part of the political strategy here, is that if they can do away with public sector unions and if they can defund labor across the country, they eviscerate the very last of their political opponents, you know, on the Democratic side. And that's, you know, it's just clearly part of their political calculation.
Ruth, thanks so much. We've got two more callers. Are you willing to take them?
Yeah.
Okay, Jake, I think you're up next. Oh, Jack, sorry. Go ahead, Jack.
Yeah, is that me?
Yeah, that's you.
Oh, good, good. You can hear me. Well, I think that this should be a prime teaching moment, if it can be made into one. Hopefully, it can, on several levels. First, that the demonization of the government that's happened so severely since the Reagan era, that the government, you know, what was the phrase? I'm from the government, and I'm here to help you. The 10 worst, most dangerous or scary words in the language is so ironic. You mentioned FDR and the irony of the governor of Wisconsin having his so-called fireside chats. The demonization of FDR, who literally saved the capitalists' asses, the history shows. Through dirigistic programs, the government, in fact, is what protects the underclasses from the extremes of the capitalists. I mean, that's proven in history as well. And to be the demonization of the government is something that is so severe, and we see it very clearly. You made another comment about Mary Matlin. Mm-hmm. People should be aware Mary Matlin is married to James Carville. Mm-hmm. And we know Carville from the Clinton administration.
Oh, yes.
And what we've got there, literally, what we've got there is a real, you know, they rarely go on the air together, but were they to do so, you would have a literal Punch and Judy show there. Mm-hmm. And this is what it's about, distracting the underclasses to be fighting amongst themselves. To say the Tea Party is my enemy. No, those socialists are my enemy. Oh, look at Obama. He's a socialist. Well, bollocks. He's put in. He was installed by Wall Street. I mean, the distraction of the underclasses is so severe. I really, really hope that something can be done to make this a real teaching moment and to show that the underclasses become aware that being set up to fight amongst ourselves is exactly the conspiracy, if one can say that, of the oligarchy. And I really wish people would start using that word. They are oligarchs. The Koch brothers and their cronies are oligarchs. The plutocrats carry their water. The plutocrats are nouveau riche favored politicians and water carriers who literally would be forced from their table for farting without permission. I mean, these oligarchs really will not. I mean, their servants, the plutocrats and the people running the Tea Party. Look at Palin. Palin is a joke. She's put there simply to distract people. That's the only reason she's there. And you know, and so I really hope that this teaching moment can prevail. And thank you for the work that you're doing there in Wisconsin.
Yes, thank you so much for your comments. I just wanted to mention one other thing, Ruth. Your colleague at the Progressive, Math Rothschild, said, and this is a quote from him, We are witnessing in Wisconsin the closest thing to a general strike that this country has seen since the 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like he's talking about the spirit of the late 19th century workers.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah,
and in the office at the Progressive, we have bound volumes of the Progressive magazine from the 1930s with, you know, photographs of those massive labor marches across the country where, you know, people literally gave their lives for this labor movement. People were beaten to death. They were lynched. You know, there was a real war on in this country to win the labor rights that are being taken away now. And I think there's a real reactivation of that sense of what's at stake. And, you know, there's not a general strike in Wisconsin right now. There was a walkout by teachers. It was a sick out. They declared sick days for a number of days last week and then Monday. And then there have been a lot of people who've come down to the Capitol. I talked to a woman yesterday from La Crosse who drives a snowplow, and about 20 city workers from La Crosse came down. A lot of firefighters, although Walker specifically exempted the firefighters from this bill, they came out to show their support. But there's not a general strike here. However, if this bill passes, and Walker does have the votes to pass it, unless a handful of Republicans change their minds, and Walker is standing very, very firm and saying that's not going to happen, we're going to have this bill. And when that happens, I think we will see a general strike. There is a lot of talk about that among the unions in Wisconsin, that a true general strike by all of the public workers, which means that hospitals won't be staffed, schools won't be staffed, the roads won't be cleared, the trash won't be picked up, that may well happen in our state in the weeks to come.
Ruth, I also wanted to mention, Ohio, actually, not so much Ohio. Yeah, Ohio, Maine, and most recently Idaho, people are beginning to join join what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are big demonstrations going on in Ohio and Indiana, where the Democrats walked out, as we talked about earlier. And, you know, this is a coordinated national strategy, this attack on unions.
Yes.
There are, you know, there is also a coordinated response now more and more.
Well, we're...
You know, I think when you think about how this rhetoric has built up over time, Rush Limbaugh on his radio show recently called public employees, members of public employee unions, bottom feeders. You know, there has been this kind of rhetoric. You know, the
yes.
teachers union has been a bugaboo, the NEA of the right. You know, you used to hear Phyllis Schlafly talk about it all the time, really get people ginned up about how terrible the teachers unions are. This rhetoric, you know, was part of this building political strategy to disempower unions. And it's really peaking now because they're actually doing it in state after state. You know, in Indiana, in Ohio, in Tennessee, in Wisconsin, trying to take away the fundamental right for unions to bargain for their members' wages and benefits.
Ruth,
and that, it just really pushes it over the edge. And I think there
yes.
are a lot of people who have been kind of complacent, and they think, well, you know, unions, they're the equivalent of sort of bureaucracy. Nobody loves bureaucracy. Everybody has their story about government bureaucracy, about the DMV. And there's this kind of it's become a very mainstream kind of mild anti-union sentiment. Well, this is different. I think this is really the point at which that has built to this political strategy to completely disempower people and to take away so many rights we've taken for granted as workers in this country that I think the tide is turning, and I think that comparison to the 1930s is very apt because there was a time in this country when there was a broad consciousness of what the labor unions represented, of whose interests they represented, of how greedy the bosses of companies were and how much in need of protection the workers were. And I think we're coming back to that time now where people can really see that, and you really can't have that kind of complacent middle-of-the-road attitude anymore.
That's right. We just have a couple of minutes left, but we have one more caller on the line. If we could, Joanne, if you could make it briefly, thanks so much for calling.
Something smells smelly to me in Chicago. Ron Emanuel, Obama's advisor, got in so easy as mayor, and that smells to me. Thank you.
thank you. She really was brief and to the point.
She was brief. Yep, Rahm Emanuel, mayor of Chicago. You know, I'm talking about Wisconsin politics. I don't have a whole lot of insight to shed on Illinois politics today.
Well, you know, I think we're going to have to wind it up now. And Ruth, thank you so much for joining us this morning. And
sure.
Just to tell the listeners, we've been talking with Ruth Conniff and with listeners about outbreaks of workers resisting the powers of the corporate bosses, in this case, Wisconsin, but also spreading to Ohio and Maine, maybe.
Yeah.
So thanks so much. And everyone, do stay tuned to KBOO 90.7 in Portland.